latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. About five to the top of the hour. We'll call it hour two, and that means it's Andy Serling time. And with the Belmont Stakes draw at 5:30 today at Citi Field, it's also Andy Serling time. Last year, it was tremendous fun after the pills were pulled, and Andy peppered Lucas and Fletcher.
Did you really just say pills were pulled and peppered? Pills pulled pepper. Span of about 5 seconds.
I did. It's alliterative.
After we drew the race.
That's so mundane.
That was like people who say this point in time.
Otherwise, now. Now. I love it. Well, I wish you were here. It's absolutely glorious.
Beautiful. Why would I make it better?
You're
Aren't
sunny.
You happier knowing that I'm home.
Yes,
I
comfortable.
Well last night, so it really wasn't. You know, I was going to say getting a good night's sleep. Didn't happen.
I didn't either. Actually, it's funny you say that. I was up at 2 o'clock, which I dread.
Have you seen wildlife? You haven't, because it really didn't play anywhere. It's very good. It's on Showtime on demand. I recommend watching it. You know.
Give us a quick refresher.
Richard Ford novel that Paul Dano, the actor, actually directed.
Oh yeah,
into a movie with, yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal and what's her name? Carey Mulligan. Great. It's actually really, really good. One of the better movies of last year for nobody.
Nice.
Anyway,
we haven't seen anything in ages, actually.
There's not much to see.
You are the bellwether for that. So
we
follow your lead. Obviously, looking forward to this afternoon. And last year was really fun, and you made it fun. And of course, Dale was giving you the business. It made for a unique draw.
I'm looking forward to it. What time is it? I think it's 5:30.
5:30, and it'll be at BelmontStakes.com for people that want to watch the stream.
As it is not open to the public, but
no.
It's a city field. No, I'm looking forward to it. I guess we draw the races this afternoon, and then get everything together when we get the Belmont out.
Now, and we already, of course, even in advance of the group of races and beyond the Belmont, of course, everybody knows and excited about the Met and the Manhattan, but you got the Acorn, the Jiper, the Justin Game, the Woody Stevens, the Ogden Phipps, and the Brooklyn. Saturday, I mean, it should be just ridiculous. But I tell you, Andy, Thursday, Friday, very good days of racing. I mean, that would be a big weekend for any racetrack.
No, looking forward to it, obviously. It's the focal point of the entire spring. Summer at Belmont and come together well. I agree. Finished up Thursday and Friday's cards. Looking forward to looking at Saturday today.
Absolutely. Before we talk, a couple of the spots Thursday, Friday, I do want you to give us a little feedback on the Pennine Ridge and what you thought of DeMarchelier and Seismic Wave and everything that went on there.
You know, it's an interesting race. I mean, in that the race just sort of came apart, right? I mean, the horses that were last and second to last early basically ran 1-2. They probably were the best two horses in the race. DeMarchelier has been really good. He's 3-for-3. And Seismic Wave, who really got bet very strongly. And Money was right. He ran a terrific race. And, you know, Bill Mott, I thought Bill had made a very, very interesting and good point to Dave Grenig. And, you know, it's a good point. I don't know how many people read it, though everybody should read Dave Grenig because he has so much information he imparts. But it was really interesting to hear Bill say it. And it was also a very good comment for people that think that horsemen don't care about horse players, because Bill made a very interesting point, which I've made in the past, but I thought he made it very well. He was talking about Seismic Wave's last race at Churchill. And one of the reasons that he thought he would run well this weekend was that he had run on much less than firm ground, really yielding ground, on Derby Day in the
American Derby.
Whatever that stake is for three-year-olds that Digital Age won. And he said that he didn't handle the going, and he pointed out that Churchill had mislabeled the course as firm. And, of course, the point he made was that not only, obviously, is it misleading that day, but it screws up the PPs for the horses going forward, right? Because it shows horses running unfirm, and, you know, a lot of people just sort of take that at face value. Now, of course, some people, you know, look or they pay attention. It just wasn't firm that day, and why would it have been? It poured for days, and it's not as though they did something wrong. I never understand these tracks that mislabel courses. It's misleading, and it's not as though they, you know, left a sprinkler on overnight. It rained. What are you going to do? And when you run 146, you know, for mile of the 16th races, the courses clearly aren't firm. And lo and behold, Bill was right. He handled the actual firm going on Saturday much, much better. And the point he was making was that it's not only deceptive that day, but also going forward, it screws up the PPs. And I think that happened there on one day this week. They were off, and then the next day they were on. And they had it listed as firm. They ran 146 and change in a 16th race. And I just think it's very incumbent on racetracks to get their conditions right. It's funny that we will occasionally, err on the side of caution, that we're not sure. You know, we'll list it good when it could be firm. And we'll quickly change it if it's wrong. But as opposed to, you won't see a course here listed firm that's not, you know, you won't see it if it's, you know, yielding or, and obviously we've had a lot of softer yielding and good courses over the last year of racing. And it's just important for racetracks to understand how important it is for the PPs to be accurate. I mean, you know, there are going to be things that happen, but label your courses correctly, you know, and certainly have yielding or good in there. So that, and I think the other thing is, if a course is listed as good or yielding, it's almost like a red light to horse players to look and say, oh, the course wasn't firm. How off was it? You know what I mean? And they might see good, and they may see a time that's close to the right time for a firm course and think, oh, it wasn't that off. And, of course, this all gets back, and you know, to something that we talked about last year in the show and talked about a little bit. We're running such an enormous amount of turf racing in this country, and particularly in New York. We need to get away from the firm, good, yielding, soft labels. You know, up until, you know, the constant deluges, we were firm just an incredible amount of time. And there's so many different levels of firm or good. And why not develop some sort of numerical system where, you know, one is, you know, one or even zero is a you know, a super, super firm, you know, summer type course where you haven't gotten rain for 3 weeks or whatever, and go into that way. And it just seems like it would be such a benefit to players, because I think much more than wet and dry tracks on the dirt, horses will benefit or not benefit from courses with given the ground, right? Because there really are some horses that just love given the ground and some that don't, and horses that will improve or you know, on one surface or the other. And I really wish we would go in that direction. It can't be that hard. Just start somewhere, you know? Just say we're going to do it now going forward. Horse players are smart. They'll adapt.
No, it's a point. Yeah, no, it's a point well made. Absolutely, and you know what's strange about it, Andy? Why would any racetrack be reticent to, you know, to accurately reflect the course condition?
I mean, the obvious, the old time inference would be people bet less money when the horses are off. I just don't think that comes into play anymore. You know, it really doesn't, especially when you're dealing with a derby day, right? You know, people aren't on that derby day. Because I don't know. That's always something I've surmised, you know.
Interesting.
You'll see some odd course designations in Florida. Sealed became a new course designation for them at Gulfstream. It's just so unfair and misleading to say that, you know, because it shows when if you don't label your courses, you're not doing right by the horse players. And listen, it's easier for me to sit here and say, as I work in NYRA, and we're good at it, you know. We've made mistakes at times, but not because we're trying to be deceptive. Sometimes you miss that a track is upgraded, but we are very good about it. The other thing is that somebody makes a call and you say it, you know, you can get it fixed. But I think it's incumbent on all racetracks. And the reasons it happens or doesn't happen aren't that significant. The idea is just, let's just get it right. And listen, I mean, I think it is something I wish we would do in New York, because we are, you know, so we're starting these big turf series for three-year-olds. Let's take our turf racing as seriously as we expect others to take it, right? And do something about these track designations. Now, the problem is we can't change it alone, because we can't have that system if nobody else does. And, you know, obviously one of the issues in this industry is getting people to get together and do things together. I really wish the industry would come up with a standard for measuring their turf courses. And I think if we're going to run a lot of turf races, everyone, then we should give it the seriousness that it deserves and label these courses. You know, this is something we really could do, you know, come up with a way that you measure it that's universal and just, you know, have the track supers do it. Can't be that hard, right?
No, I agree. And you know, I can tell you the place to introduce this discussion is at the track superintendents meeting that they have annually. And that's where it should be. That's where it should be floated.
Yeah. I can't imagine that Glenn or Brian and Naira wouldn't be, you know, they take it seriously. And, you know, I think a lot of these supers do. It just would be, I think it would really be a benefit to turf racing in general and to players. It would obviously, listen, you have to do these things for players. And the other thing is, you know, you don't have to worry about being that exact, right? I mean, if you have a three, somebody say it could have been a two or a four, right? You know, it's reasonably close. It's not like you have to, you know, it's not like you have to worry about, I mean, you're going to try to be as exact as possible, but, you know, I don't think we have to, you know, it's not like a seven was a three, right? Anyway.
You know, by the way, since this came up in terms of track condition and maintenance, et cetera, and the inference, and you mentioned Glenn Kozak, There is a wonderful piece, a thoughtful and well written Washington Post is at least who circulating it. It was written by an AP writer, Stephen Wino, all about the Belmont main track. And it talks about the long-term positive effects of the task force going back to 2012 and everything that, you know, that was learned there and how it has been, you know, benefited racing, particularly here, and, you know, the safety record of the Belmont main track. And I invite people to seek out this piece. It's Belmont Features. Yeah, I will. I will. Pat, actually, I just saw that Pat McKenna, and then I went and read the article. And,
Pat tweeted it out.
Yeah.
Oh, then I'll retweet it.
There you go. There we go. And I want to add something to it. That's otherwise I would have already, because I do want to point out that, it, especially in light of what went on out west, it just shows that responsible racetrack organizations take personal responsibility for the circumstances at their facilities and learn from it and change. That's what happened here. That's what happened at Del Mar. Enough said, but the residual benefit is the excellent record that this track has been producing, but it's 7 years ago, and it took a whole bunch of things that were basically brought out by the task force, and that the industry just shows, demonstrates that the industry can handle circumstances like that and move forward. That's the tangent to this article in the Washington Post. So I want to make that point. Andy, looking ahead to tomorrow or Thursday and Friday, let's touch on a couple of spots, because in addition to the stakes, the Wonder again gets things going on Thursday. And, of course, we get newspaper,
I like newspaper
of record.
She looks pretty good now. What do you think?
Yeah, I think she'll be tough.
I think, it's in a way, it's, because while obviously she didn't run badly in her return race, she didn't show the brilliance that she had shown last year. That was her first start of the year. Maybe she was a little fresh, but she ran off. And she lost because she ran off. Rusty's horse ran a huge race. So, lost in that a little bit. I think so many people spent so much time sort of, being disappointed in newspaper record that maybe the winner just didn't get the credit she deserved.
Mm-hmm.
If the winner ran a gigantic race in there, and Rusty's horse, Concrete Rose, and she had never run nearly as well as that as a 2-year-old, but she really stepped forward, much more so than her one race. She had the prep, the one race at Tampa, but to beat Blowout like she did by a half length, and then go out and do what she did at newspaper record, that was a dominant performance. And if she, legitimately takes that step forward, newspaper record is going to have to be the top of her game to beat her in the Belmont Oaks, because that was a giant race by her. And you'd like to see the two of them have a real rivalry. But newspaper record, the winner, now she did rate in her debut, weaker field or not, so she showed she could set. In this field, it doesn't seem likely that somebody else is going to lead, so she'll probably go to the front, and unless she just completely falls apart, she's very likely to win this race. But it's a bit of a race for her in the sense that her last race wasn't bad by any stretch of the imagination, but it was not, this was a horse that had the potential to be a real superstar, and obviously that wasn't the case in her return. Not a bad race by any stretch, but not what we had kind of expected. So we'll see what she delivers in this race. But this is an important race for her.
After the Wonder again, I do want to point out, Andy, that Maiden Special, the 6.5 furlong filly group that has got some pretty heady pedigrees in the firsters. How about Rudy sending that Liza Jambalaya, who's
well,
a half to...
Well, it's Vinny Scuderi.
Yeah.
Half to who?
Dad's Caps, and Vicento.
Well, he was full of Paul's Silver Lining and a half of Dad's Caps. And Vinny had all, kept all those horses. And, you know, I mean, obviously, it's a gigantic pedigree in the sense that, you know, if you look at the runners, there's only like one or two that weren't really good. Congabella was in there as well. So it'll be interesting to see that. I think that horse was entered MTO earlier. The three horse, My Happy Place, for Shug. My Happy Face was a very, very good horse. She was third in the test. She ran for a number of barns. Chad had her briefly. I think Rudy had her at one time, too. Well, trial and error.
Dream Tree?
It's a fold of Dream Tree. And, you know, people look and say, well, how did a fold for Dream Tree go for 100,000? Well, she sold as a weanling well before Dream Tree obviously had, you know, even run. So, yeah, no, I agree. Those are three well-bred firsters in that race. What else?
Then we move on, and there's another maiden going a mile on the grass. There's a allowance, and then the Astoria, the first of the two-year-old stakes. And Dave Grenig was with me yesterday, Andy, and kind of banged the drum about the out-of-towners that kind of filled up these two two-year-old stakes.
Yeah, the Tremont did not come up a particularly strong field on Friday. The Astoria came up as a very interesting race on Thursday. I mean, on paper, you know, it's going to be tough to beat that American Pharoah runner for Wesley Ward on Friday, the two. I know Doug O'Neill shipped in a horse that looked on paper like the second likeliest winner. I mean, this race, you've got a number of things. Interesting with Jeremiah Englert as the first-time star on the rail. Reiterate was okay for Mark Cassie, as well as Perfect Alibi. And Perfect Alibi, I think some will think is the horse to beat in here. Other horses. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see Wesley Ward's horse on the outside of broke its maiden at Churchill. Can Twirling Owen sort of get back to the debut?
Right.
Last time she did not run well against the boys. But, yeah, no, I agree. I thought this story was good. And the Intercontinental came up fun race as well.
Any thoughts? Significant Form is going to try to kind of reboot the career after the splashy two-year-old form, and then kind of it seemed like a travail, like a kind of the three-year-old season never really got going.
Well, to be fair with her, she ran very well in her debut. Her Wonder Again was a good effort, a mile and an eighth. She did not, you know, she didn't run terribly in the Belmont. She was just a bit disappointing, but she finished fourth. Mile and a quarter might have been a little far for her. And then she caught that bog against Rushing Fall in the Lake Placid. Maybe just didn't handle it then and off the turf race. So we'll see. Yeah, I agree, though. You know, she has to go. But listen, Chad Brown has two others in there. Zanza, who did not run well in her U.S. debut, but she'd run well enough overseas for Marty Schwartz that she may be okay. Stella de Camelot ran very well in a soft turf. We'll see if she can, you know, run as well in a firm turf. And then there was an outside that ran 1, 2, 3 in the license fee. They're all major players, the likes of Fire Key, Broadway Run, and Fear No Evil. So I think it's a matchup for them.
What a nice horse Fire Key's been. Obviously, Pat Kelly for a long time, and then went down to Florida with Joe Catanese.
Yeah. Well, she was sold.
Yeah.
No, she got a very good ride by Jose Ortiz, taking advantage last time of Broadway Run, not breaking particularly sharply. But, it's a good race.
Let's turn to Friday, too. And the action starts with the Bed of Roses. I actually, driving in this morning, saw John Kimmel on the backside and Pacific Gale.
It must have been so exciting for him.
It is. It was, he said. Separation of Powers on the outside. Not a bad spot to stalk from. And Pacific Gale, Shalon, who... You know, always gives a good accounting of herself. And
well, she's the speed, you know. Yeah. Gives her an edge. She's been after run better than she did last time where she beat a nondescript field. Pacific Gale, you know, had a good trip last time and had a little bit of trouble. Probably should have won. I'm sure Dawn the Destroyer won't run better for Kieran in here. She's sort of against it last time, and maybe she'll have a better chance today. There isn't a ton of pace. We'll see. Separation of Powers obviously has to improve off her four-year-old return, but she can. And she's, you know, she's run some good races in the past. Her test was very, very good, but we'll see. She's going to have to bounce back, though.
That was you mentioned the Tremont and Maven. Obviously, Wesley Ward is the major entity.
Yeah, it'll be a heavy favorite in there. Maybe four left the Doug O'Neill horse, but. You know, and you've got a couple on the outside, one for Steve Asmussen and one for cookie salsa. So we'll see. The True North came up, and the True North starts that two-day
20%
pick six, 15% takeout, mandatory payout, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I mean, this is a really sensational race, the True North. And Catalina Cruiser is the name, the likely favorite. And the good Catalina Cruiser is very, very good. I don't know what happened to this horse in the Beers Cup Dirt. I mean, the question's going to, it's always going to sort of haunt John Sadler. I know he got Accelerate. He won the Breeders' Cup. He had a good Breeders' Cup weekend, but his record out in California is not that good. Now, it may just be circumstantial, but I can't believe you would bring him here without feeling pretty confident about his chances in here. So I have to think he's going to run well. Doesn't mean he's going to win, but this is an interesting race because there's a lot of good horses here. Stand the Man, Nicodemus are both talented. Strike Power, obviously, when he runs his good races, is very good. I really think they're supposed to just go to the lead at all costs with him. He's fast. I just don't think you want to rate him because he's never been able to be successful without going to the front end. So unless, they really feel confident one way or the other. But, his good races are good. Obviously, Whitmore, is the sort of closer with the PPs. He did not run well in the Churchill Downs race. It was a race dominant in the front end, but he didn't run well. And, Duchere is outside of it here, ran much better than he did. And I don't know that Duchere can't win this race. He's a dangerous horse. Listen, Gold for the King has run some good races at times. So this is a very deep field, Recruiting Ready and others. This is a very strong race.
The prep, if you go back to Recruiting Ready for a second, and that was where Firenze Fire just further confirmed his affinity for this racetrack and just blitzed everybody. Recruiting Ready, was plucky to stay on.
No, he wasn't. That was not a good effort by him at all, actually.
Well,
that was actually an extremely disappointing effort for him. He stalked the pace and he barely was able to get by the speed. He barely held up Bon Raison. It was a long shot here. And Recruiting Ready is a very tough read for me because he's obviously run some very good races. But in the midst of those good races are races that just are too many races that aren't that good. So I don't find him trustworthy because this is a very tough field. He's going to really have to run his best race to win it. Now, his best race is good, but he's not going to be any factor if he runs his last race. That's a fact.
Do you, well, on that topic,
no-shotter here.
Do you, at 6.5, which is an oddball, a little bit of an odd duck as a sprint distance, do you prefer, a miler type, or 7/8 miler type?
I prefer the best horse.
Well, and who'd you pick in here? Or who will you be picking officially? You're not sure yet?
People have to wait. They can watch Talking Horses.
Well, and of course, we don't have
I decide to post them.
And Morning Line, too, have been yet to produce for either Thursday or Friday. Talk about the New York as well, Andy. Here's the mile and a quarter, grade two, and not a big field, but a nice field.
Well, I mean, much like last year, and this is the race, only race Sister Charlie lost last year, and he lost to Four Star Crook. Chad Brown has Homerique and Competition of Ideas, and they're just very much the two beat this race. Polly Elena showed that she can still run a little bit last time, so she's all right. Lady Montour, maybe on a firmer turf, will bounce back. I kind of like Semper Santentier, the Mark Hennig horse, but Competition of Ideas and Homerique are very good horses, so they're going to be tough. Which way ultimately Homerique will be a favorite. She's the likelier winner, and she should appreciate the mile and a quarter, as is Competition Ideas. But Competition Ideas could have if she had gotten a cleaner outside run like Homerique did, she probably would have won. But that doesn't mean that she's going to beat her this race, because Homerique may have needed the last race, and she's supposed to be better in a mile and a quarter than a mile and 16.
Well, finally, the Belmont Gold Cup and the 2 mile sojourn.
Yeah. That's the second leg of that 2 day pick six. The race
yes.
on Saturday, I think, they're the Woody, the Met, the Manhattan, the Belmont. It's a funny Euros, right? I mean, I don't know if you've looked at it, but Mutsadir, the Mutsadir on the horse on the rail, doesn't really appear this is a turf horse. It appears to be a synthetic horse, so I don't quite understand it. The other Euro, same thing with Amadi. I don't know. The Irish bred, the three horse. I mean, this is another horse that appears to be very good on synthetic, but doesn't seem to be effective on the dirt. The other Euro, this Ra Tal, who won it, the 2 mile race in Germany last time, he's probably the one you want of the Euros. I'm not sure how good he is, though. You know, I don't know. I think Red Knight's going to be tough in here. He's showing he likes the distance. I mean, Arklow will probably be favored off a second, the Man of War. It's understandable, but the question is he necessarily a 2 mile horse, right? Big difference between a mile and 3/8 and mile and a half and 2 miles. Whereas you know with Red Knight, Mott's horse, the horse can handle it. And last year, second place finisher, got a very good trip last time to get second. Probably Prince of Erin, who was third, should have been second. But still, you know, he can handle the distance. He's in here as well. He gets a nice rider switch to Joel Rosario. So, I like Red Knight here. I think he's going to be tough. And, I think Paul Tall and Arklow, of course, can win. And Canister is not impossible.
Well, always, it's an intriguing addition to the stakes landscape. And Andy, before we go, Mark Cassie is going to join us live here. I got to get a couple of just a quick thought from you about Saturday, about Belmont and the Met.
Well, I don't want to give out big opinions until
sure.
I've seen the races.
Now, understood.
I'm going to take a look at them. I have a very divided opinion on these things. I would find it very satisfying if Word Will won, because I really respect the fact that Mark, you know, he didn't whine after the Derby. His horse was interfered with, but he didn't, you know, make a big deal about it. And unlike a lot of other people, I respect that Mark runs his horses, and he ran them in the Preakness, and he's running the Belmont, and I'd be very happy to see him rewarded for that. I really would. I think Cassis is going to be extremely tough to beat in the Belmont. I really think he's just very good, and I think he's going to be very hard to beat. But there's a part of me that I won't bet him, and I've been wrong about War Will every time he runs, but there's a part of me that would be very happy to see him win, because I like the fact that Mark shows up.
Oh, you're sweet.
Oh, you're there. You're there.
I told
you when you come to the draw.
He said so many nice things. Mark was
him
was
and the, I. We actually love each other. Yeah. Well, thank you. No, I appreciate that. I just heard what you said, and I appreciate it.
Right, don't be nice to Steve.
How can you not be nice to Steve? He's even nice. I mean, now you, I can be a little tough too, but
exactly.
Steve, I mean.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying.
All right, Mark, I'll see you in a few hours. At
okay.
Nice
Look
day.
Forward to it. Thank you, Andy.
Andy, thanks a lot. 5:30, you can watch. You can't hear me? Interesting. All right. That's weird. Better now, maybe? No? You still can't hear me. That's weird. All right. What else could I... Huh. What else could I do here? Do you want to use the stick mic instead?
I just can't hear
and then you
can,
at all. Then you'll hear me. All right, so pull that off. Take that headset off. That's strange. All right, I'll work on that after the show. And actually, the mic is nicer. I don't want to mess your hair.
Oh yeah, okay.
But I'm bummed. That was me not being nice. Well, wait a minute.
Well, I just said how nice you were.
Mark Cassie joining us, and I was urging you to listen to Andy for a second, because he actually even said more nice things about how you did not gripe and did not bitch and moan after the Derby, and you said all the right things. You know, you did then answer, you know, what needed to be addressed subsequently. But, you know, then coming back and winning that Preakness, which really exercised so many, not demons, but you know, frustrations.
Yeah, I mean, as I've said a million times, and I appreciate Andy saying nice things, I just was so happy just to have my horse that it really didn't matter. And, you know, so... It was nice to win the. It would have been nice to win the Preakness, if any time.
Yeah.
But it may be a little extra special, just because he got a chance to get it done.
Then to, you know, to very quickly regroup, and that's me, actually. It's very strange for some reason.
Okay.
I thought that's the case. I just fixed it. You then very quickly, I mean, the horse hadn't cooled out, and you said, we have every expectation that if everything's all right, we're going to New York.
Well, you know me. I like to run, and David Carroll once said, to him, you think Mark will run him there? And he goes, well, you know he likes to run. So I just I go back many, many times to Alan Jerkins, and he said, run them when they're good.
Exactly.
And he's good right now, so I want to run.
And I know this is a silly – I said to myself, I think I even said this after the Preakness, that I wouldn't get into this kind of speculation. What can of worms gets opened if he wins on Saturday?
Nothing by me. You know, I've heard different things, and do you look back? Do you ever think what could have been? And I'm so happy to be just where I'm at that I'm not looking back. And
perfect.
You know what? As I said before the Preakness, only God knows what would have happened, and maybe a few handicappers. But I have to tell you, I was a little irritated by Andy Beyer. And I've known Andy. He was dear friends with my dad. And, you know, Andy always has his opinions. But he said that War of Will lost a length. Yeah, I was a little irritated by that. But I still love Andy as well.
The one part of this that I really have not had a chance to expand on, and I haven't had him on when I really should, is Tyler Gaffalione, who also for a young guy handled everything very well. I mean, he had a couple of things on Twitter where he came back in the face of some people who I don't blame him for some of the way in which he responded, and he wasn't bad about it. But it should really be championed that this is a breakout win for him. I mean, that he'd been knocking on the door, and you've been confident in him, and this is a significant opportunity for him to really go on with it.
Well, and I think he showed how great he was in the Preakness, because he could have panicked. You know, there was a time and place about the 3/8 pole where he could have panicked, especially given what had happened 2 weeks prior. But he sat chilly. He believed in the horse, and he gave him a tremendous ride. And I've never doubted Tyler for one second. And, I didn't doubt him after the Derby. I just think, not only is he an outstanding rider, but he's a wonderful young man as well, which is important to me.
Oh, absolutely. And this riding at this track, what preparations and in terms of getting him, every opportunity to understand the oval.
Well, yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I'm sure he's ridden here some. That's not really been a concern of mine. I think it's more important for him to know the horse, which he knows so well. I think great riders just ride good anywhere you put them. And so not really worried about that.
I'm just pulling him up. I want to see if, because he's at Churchill early in the week, is he going to have a mount before?
Well, he's going to ride God Stormy for us, so
okay.
I'm sure that's going to be before.
But
and that'll be on the grass.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know whether he's going to ride anything. I do have a couple other horses in, but he doesn't ride. We've got looks like we're going to run Strike Silver in the Woody Stevens, and we're going to ride. Dreammaker in the
and the easy goer. But both those guys were. I'm sticking with the guys that rode them. I'm not going to go and make a change on that. I don't know whether he rides anything else or not that day.
All right. Well, that's something we'll follow up on because he is Thursday and Friday.
Yeah.
He is busy at Churchill. Not anything for you, Wesley and McKeever and Maker and Fox and
he's having another outstanding meet there again.
Very much. Mm-hmm. Before we talk about this past weekend and this past week and really what has been an unbelievable run, I'm going to talk to you about that in a second overall, but the Gary Barber equation, Gary will be here?
He's going to be here.
All right, there we go. Good. Because he didn't seem disappointed at all, when we talked to him from Con on Tuesday.
You mean disappointed in what way?
That he couldn't be there.
Oh. He does have a day job.
Yeah.
I always tell him, don't quit your day job.
that makes everything possible.
Yes. Yes.
He was so elated. And you could just tell, how pleased he was because of what we talked about with you, and at the time of the statement, or after, Gary released the statement as well, because everybody feels badly for Gary West. Everybody does.
I do.
Everybody does.
I mean,
but at the same time, everybody's got to stick up for their own interests. And I thought, the way Gary Barber responded was very polished and appropriate.
Oh well, he's a first class man. What can I say? But I even said, I feel for Gary West. I said, if we don't win the Kentucky Derby next year, I hope it's Gary West because he deserves it. He's been in the game for a long time, and nobody can even begin to imagine what he went through. Thinking you're going to win and then have it taken away. As far as Gary Barber, I mean, him and I have just such a great relationship. We talk constantly. We're not just we're friends too, and we talk about other things. It doesn't have to be just horses, and just a first class guy, and it means a lot. We won our first Queen's Plate together. We won our first Breeders' Cup together.
Yep.
And then to win my first classic, I have such great people. I mean, I'm so fortunate. The Oxleys,
Charlotte,
Live Oak,
exactly.
Mr. Farmer, the Farmer. So I pinch myself every morning.
Let's shift away from Belmont and the Triple Crown season and talk about just this past week. And as I mentioned, this really incredible run. I mean, this has been as strong a month plus, I imagine, as you can remember.
It's funny because I looked, and I think from an earnings standpoint, we won almost $3 million, I think, last month. And if you would have, I think we won the one race, the $500,000 race on June 1st.
Right, so that's
that
not in
night.
There?
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe when we won two Breeders' Cups, we may have won more money that way. But it was a strong month. It was not just that. I changed the way I did things a few years back, and we do so much more now in Ocala at our training center, and I was extremely proud of Moon Colony coming off 4.5 months. Went in the Penn Mile the day before. We had Mo Diddley win here at Belmont.
Yep.
Going 7/8. Both those horses came off long layoffs, and we sent them from our training center something like 2.5 weeks before the race. So that tells you that the majority of their preparations were done there at our training center. And that's where now I spend a lot of time. We get horses ready, and then we send them out from there. We ran a horse, Sunday maybe, that could be any kind, a horse called Super Comet. And he won the last race at Churchill. I think it was Sunday, first time out, 7/8.
Yep.
He was the horse that we thought was the best two-year-old that we had that year. And we had just problem after problem with him. And, again, you know, the training center and Mitch Downs and all the hard work that goes down there, Cindy Black. They're not only they're our team, but they're my family. Mitch has been with me 38 years, Cindy 25 years. And to be able to have it all and to have this success, and so much of it, the success you see is filtered through that. And so I'm quite proud of that.
I want to talk about a couple of the specifics, and we'll circle back to horses like Super Comet, who won by 5 lengths, 85 Buyer in that win. The win at Penn, and I was lucky enough to hit that cross country pick five, and I took a wide approach to the Pennine Ridge and a wide range to the Penn Mile, because specifically of Moon Colony, who the more I looked, the more I thought, you know, this horse is going to be a price. And whenever you get, you know, this kind of a gap from January to June on a three-year-old, it's still the first half of the year. And so there's always the potential. He's a May foal. Mm-hmm. So he's just turned three. And the opportunity for him, you know, people are going to look at the figures and look at where he was. And it wasn't a huge gap to the favorites. So I said, you know, this race is just a little too open to not use as many as possible, and ended up catching, you know, he paid $21.60, and it boosted the thing to $350, the cross country.
Yeah, he was. So what happened, if you look, I thought his Keeneland race was pretty good when he broke his maiden. I was impressed with his New Orleans race when he won the allowance race. His quick turn of foot. So I sent him down to Gulfstream, and after the race, Jose came back and said, yeah, I think he got beat 2 lengths, mm-hmm, to one of the horses that was in the pen.
Casa Creed, yeah. Lee Einsiedler's.
Right. And Jose said, I messed up. He said, I had him back too far. He said, and the pace wasn't fast enough. Well, after that race, I wasn't completely happy with him. I just didn't think he looked great. So I brought him back to the training center, gave him a little break, and he came back, and he came back strong. I'll tell you how much I liked him. Julian Leperoux is fighting for leading rider at Churchill Downs, and he flew in to ride him on a Saturday night.
Yeah,
because I said, Julian, this horse is going to be extremely tough to beat. In fact, you know, Gary, talking about Gary Barber, Gary said to me, you got a bunch running, anything you really like tonight? And I said, Moon Colony. Goes, oh, I've got one in against him. I said, they'll have to beat him. And so I wasn't shocked by his performance. I think he's got a heck of a pedigree. He's the half to cavorting.
Yeah.
Thirst for Life. A pedigree that just gets better and better as they get older. And I think he's an extremely nice horse.
What was it that shifted you to the grass with him? And you know, yes, he's had two starts on the dirt, his career debut, and then that allowance try, and they were, from a fig standpoint, his two, you know, his two quote unquote slowest races. But you know, at a glance, pedigree wise, he's really not a turf horse on paper.
Well, Uncle Mo's.
He's getting
Carson
his share.
Carson Cities can do a little bit of anything out of the dams. I'm a big Carson City dam grandsire. I love Carson City mares. But I'll tell you why I did that. I ran him at Saratoga on the dirt. And as anybody that follows me, obviously, one, they know I'm not very successful at Saratoga. And part of that, I believe, is because I like my horses to settle and come running. I just think it's better in the long run. I'm trying to teach them. I try to treat every horse like he's a Breeders' Cup horse. until they tell me differently, or a Derby horse. So I ran him. He ran okay, but I wanted to run him. I wanted to get a two-turn race into him. I couldn't do that on the dirt. So I ran him on the grass two turns to get the two-turn race.
There you go.
And you'll see me do that a lot of times at Saratoga. I run a lot of first-time starters and a lot of horses on the grass just so I can get the two turns into them.
It is notable. It should be noted that, you know, in his debut at Saratoga, going 6 furlongs on the dirt, he ran into Mucho,
yeah,
the Claiborne Bill Mott that you know turned into a stake runner. Then in his turf maiden debut, he runs into 40 Under and Social Paranoia and Sky Chief and others. I mean, that ended up being a super key race.
And he had a troubled trip in his first turf race too at Saratoga. He got bothered, a little bobbled or something, but and then he was very impressive at Keeneland when he broke his maiden.
Very much, and you know, beat that Southern Bridge, who was gone on to some good things.
Yeah.
And then, in the allowance race, back on the dirt, he manages to find Roland, Limonite, and Everfast.
And you know what? Someday, it's probably not going to be anytime soon, because we're going to aim for the Belmont Derby with him, but I would try him on the dirt again.
And that's one of the things that you know that we love about your operation is that you know you're willing to you know to try those kinds of things, and you know the results are the results. This horse for Jack Oxley, $400,000 as a Keeneland yearling, and a May foal. What was he like as a?
Well, baby? He's still kind of. We like, Mr. Oxley and I have had a little more luck buying a lighter type of horse. He's kind of a lighter, you know, he's an athlete, but he's more refined. He was that way when we bought him, and because he's got a huge pedigree. I know $400,000 is a lot of money, but if you ever watch Uncle Mo's, there's a lot of them that bring a lot more than that. And this horse had a heck of a pedigree, but he was a little refined. He's just starting to fill out and become a man now. If this race doesn't take too much out of him, you know, because everybody 4.5 months and he could bounce a little, but I think he'll run extremely well in the Belmont Derby. He's a pretty talented horse.
Well, and he was finishing. I mean, finished yeah. great. I'm trying to. I guess there's no interim. He'll that stretch from a mile to.
Yeah. It's not a big deal.
All right,
and great ride by Julian, by the way, too.
Yeah, I came inside. Basically,
we kind of had a game plan where, you know, don't give up your inside position. And
This was also, I should mention, it just occurs to me, because, of course, Vinny Viola was involved with the big seller down at
right, the Curlin
sale, the Curlin colt. The late, in fact, I want you to talk about Jimmy Krupe. But this was also a Vinny Viola bred.
Yeah, Vinny's got a good broodmare, very good broodmare man.
As a quick opportunity. Krupe all those years.
I knew JJ forever, you know, and I'd go over to his farm and watch horses. You know, we bought horses off of him. Just a wonderful man and a character. Oh. Everybody, just a character. Loved Ocala, you know, went down, and he was very good to my father as well. My father and him were good friends, and he often told the story when he was struggling. He went to my dad, and my dad helped him out, so he would always tell me that story. So, you know, he'll be missed. We've lost some good people, you know.
No doubt. And, in fact, Keeneland, I mentioned earlier, you know, Spec Alexander's passing yesterday, and there's just an outpouring of affection.
Character. The other character. Another character. I had my butt chewed out more than once from him.
we're gonna get. I want people to, because you know, It's funny. That's one of the most anonymous kinds of jobs around the racetrack that, that people just don't know. And again, it's a it's that level of dedication and you know, the people behind the scenes that are helping horses and horsemen, you know, prepare and it, you know, it's unseen, but it makes a mammoth difference in the careers of everybody.
Absolutely. And we, you know, we've sent all our, a lot of our young horses there to get ready, you know, and through his guidance.
Let's hit a couple of as you mentioned, you had Super Comet with the Maiden Breaker. You also broke a Goldmine Cat, got the diploma at Woodbine as well on Sunday. Conquest Panthera with an allowance win. On and on and on. Everywhere I looked, you were winning. Win and you're in gin.
That was an important one.
Tell us about. Let's start there.
Well, that was there's a filly that I've really thought a lot of, and she just couldn't get it together, and I was happy to finally get her. She ran a big race because she came from Live Oak. We didn't have her long, and you know, we needed Super Charlotte had won a couple races, so we needed Win and You're In Gin to win one.
This was a two-year-old in training sale purchase at OBS March last year, and $290,000, and took five starts. An Into Mischief filly out of the Trippy Mare and a Son.
Underachiever so far.
Yeah,
I think you know, I thought her race the other day was better. I think there's more there. There's still more there.
Well, you've got, you know, it's interesting at this time of year when you start breaking, you know, these maidens, it a lot of times can be the first salvo towards something really good. You know, that whether it's a horse that was delayed, a two-year-old that never got started, we saw Baffert get that comical ghost going out west over the weekend, or a horse like this that had either things that were, you know, little dents in the fender,
right,
and little setbacks, and there's also mental maturity, there's physical growth. I mean, there's so many different things that can hold a horse back from graduating.
Yeah, we have a thing we say where Norman really started. He goes, they're too good not to be good at something. So you get those kind of horses, and that I would have put her in that category. She's too good not to be good at something. So now it's our job to continue to try to, you know, get her to get better and find her places for her to get her confidence. Probably do, and the nice thing is I trained for a lot of wonderful people to let me do what I want to do. She would be one that I would probably get four or five starts into this year, and then let her have another rest and grow up and look for a really good four-year-old. It's what I did with Got Stormy. Got Stormy started tailing off towards the end of her three-year-old career. Teppan did as well, and now Got Stormy's come back and been, you know, she was third in a grade one, I think, and then second in a grade two. And so that's kind of what we do. You see me do that a lot. I'm extremely excited, as I said earlier, about Super Comet. Not only he got away a little slow, he moved up. He was about five wide. And I at that time, I thought he'd flatten out down the lane, and said he took off. And it was a good maiden race. I would say I don't get too excited very often. I would say before that, the maiden race that excited me before that would have been War of Will. If he stays healthy, we're gonna aim him for the Alan Jerkins. I think he's that good. Yeah,
that kind of horse. There's so many that I Mark, I can throw at you, and I want to hit a couple of follow-ups to stuff we talked about after Preakness, including some wins like Super Tap It and so forth, but. Do you find, you talked about the Saratoga frustrations, how much do you find your barns and your various, you know, installations? Because basically you've got, you know, essentially three active, you know, between New York, Toronto, and Kentucky.
And Florida. We have a little. Florida serves its own purpose in the summertime. You'll see us get a lot of young horses. maybe get their first starts. I love getting starts in horses.
Well, you tried to sneak one by the other day, the sibling on Saturday.
She ran pretty good.
She ran okay. Yeah. Then, obviously, was you recognized the keeper kind of out of sight.
Well, what happened there is I trained her, and she just wasn't going forward for me, and I felt like I could, one, go ahead and give her some time, or I could send her to a new place and see if I could wake her up that way. You know, she's got a lot of expectations. She's after a champion to Classic Empire. And interesting enough, we sent her down there. We tried her on the grass. I love sending. Palm Meadows has got such a great training turf course. So we tried her on that, and I was very pleased. I haven't decided yet. I may run her again there, or I may bring her to Saratoga. We'll see. But I can tell you, since she's run, the lights have come on. So, that's what I'm looking for. And, you know,
that's part of that equation. The horse we're talking about, because we haven't mentioned the name, is Classic Girl, is who you want to write down. She's a candy ride for Jack Oxley, was actually bred by China Horse Club. And
no, I don't think so.
That's what they. That's
oh, really?
What
they, I thought it was Brandy. And, oh, really?
They're okay. Listed at that point. I mean,
yeah.
They. Okay. Was Sambuca Classica, was she sold in maybe in?
Oh, maybe.
Maybe sold in
maybe,
fall?
Maybe. You might be right.
She might have been sold in fall.
Read Classic Empire.
Let me just, I'll tell you right away. And of course, Sambuca Classica, a New York bred by Cat Thief. And I don't see an auction history. So somehow the China Horse Club got their books in.
Yeah.
Anyway, the sibling to Classic Empire. I was leading into the hot barn scenario, that when something, whether a barn is cold and tensions start to rise and the horses kind of sense it, and then a wind comes, the tension is lifted, and then everybody starts to run. And people can scoff all they want. It is an absolute reality. It's amazing.
I couldn't disagree with you more.
All right.
I said that right. I couldn't agree with you
yes.
more. I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry. I said that. I couldn't agree with you more. There are some times when nothing goes right, and then there's sometimes when you know, everything you touch and do, and you know, but all I can tell you, don't ever get too excited because it'll change.
Exactly.
You know.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Because I've had this discussion with a lot of horsemen, and there's that Todd Pletcher barn placidity where nobody is, where everybody is kept maintain an even strain as they'd set around NASA and the Mercury program. But then, you know, there are the first place I became aware with it was with Del Carroll, and Del's barn would get super cold, and then a wind would come, and then all of a sudden everybody starts to win. Gary's barn, Siaka, is the same way. They get cold, and everybody's getting edgy. Especially when you had horses that you were anticipating good performances from, something goes wrong, and that snowball effect starts. But then, when the wind comes, suddenly, and the horses feed off the uplifted spirits.
It's interesting because when we go through those times, you know, I often have talks with my people and say, look, guys, it's okay. We're going to be all right. You know, we've been doing this too long. We're just going to keep doing the same thing, and it'll turn around. So, yeah, we try to always look at that because it does. It changes. Sometimes it works. I mean, we've struggled big time at Churchill this spring, which in Churchill's usually a big bread and butter for us. And then, of course, Belmont, we've done well. So it just – sometimes things just happen you know, you just got to keep plugging away.
You've mentioned other names, but I want to do it formally here while we have the opportunity and the luxury. Who's running each of the outfits out and about?
Well, we have Jamie Begg here.
Jamie Begg?
Yep. Begg.
Begg.
Yep. David Carroll takes care of Kentucky. David Adams, who's been with me 25 years plus. He's my woodbine guy. He, you know, he's all woodbine. We've got Nick Tomlinson's at Gulfstream. And what he normally does is we switch a lot of horses back and forth from our training center. And that's ran by Mitch Downs,
who's been with me
for, I think now, 38 or 39 years.
And his health, he's back to 100%?
Oh, yeah, he's good. He's good. And the nice thing is they all work together. Well, I think what's interesting, every person on that list
has had a hand.
Has had War of Will.
There you go. That tells you a lot about operating a.
He started out. We got War of Will almost a year ago here at Belmont. And Jamie Begg had him here. First time Jamie worked him, he said, "I think we have something special." Hmm. So then he went to Saratoga, where I was with Nick. Then he went to David Adams. David Adams had him for about 3 weeks. He ran him. He ran okay. Then he breezed him. He goes, "This horse is a star." I said, "I told you that." So then I think he went from there to David Carroll in Kentucky.
In the fall.
And he trained him. He goes, "Oh, this horse is a super horse." I said, "Told you that."
Do the exercise riders, if something comes along like this, a horse like this, a Teppan, et cetera, do they follow with, or do you
sometimes
interchangeable?
Now, this has been a truly Carroll family. David's been got on him, and Declan breezed him all the time,
right,
until
he got
hurt. And then now, and Kim travels with him, so she was grinning ear to ear this morning.
Well, and Aislinn, she was busting to get to for Derby.
She got there.
Well, with Tina. They both spent the night together in the Philadelphia airport.
Oh, really?
And then they took the circuit.
So, yeah, it's a family affair. There could be some feuding going on there. Kim was just smiling, you know, ear to ear this morning. And then after the Breeders' Cup, he went to Mitch.
And spent the winter.
Yep, spent, you know, 45 days, and then back to David Carroll.
Fairgrounds. Yeah.
So everybody, our entire team has had this horse.
Well, there's actually a very fun parallel here, because when it comes to Kim and Davy Carroll, Kim would, it's her opportunity to prepare a Belmont winner, because of course Davey was the exercise rider,
easy goer.
Yeah,
I have to tell you just a quick thing, and I'm not going to give you any names, but I had a fairly large owner, and he had a number of horses, and he said to me, "I don't know how you can do this, but because," he said, "I've never had all my horses with one trainer." I said, "You don't have them with one trainer." I said, "You have them with five different trainers." And I said, "Any of them are capable of being on their own. I'm just the quarterback. And what's so nice about it is there is no conflict. There's no, when I think a horse should be here, then I call up and I say, we're moving this horse. And not a word is ever said about that. And so everything, all the parts are interchangeable. And I think that's what makes us so strong. It allows me to look at five or six condition books and stakes and everything. And we can do that. And we go there. And that's how we win a lot of races, by having the horses in the right spots at the right racetracks.
Well, and the results are there, and the big wins are coming, and I look at this, and I mean, there's a million questions, but I think people probably got a really good feel to hear those names. I do have to ask, Nick Tomlinson, not Mike and Vicky, is that no?
Okay. Nick's from Canada, a young okay. man. A real superstar. He's been with us not long, maybe 3 or 4 years, but he was assistant to Malcolm Pierce before that.
Okay.
And I still remember the day he came and talked to me, and I went home and I said to my wife, Tina, I said, I think I just found a star. It's just, to me, it's getting along with people and their attitudes. And you can tell which ones are in it and really want to become something. And he's one.
A couple of other horses to update us on. You know, some of the horses that there's some expectation for that need you know to maybe pick up their game a little bit. Catherine the Great. Getting a little frustrated.
I have no answers for you on that one. She's happy. She's healthy. I've tried different things. I have no answers for that one.
There's plenty of evidence or past experience when it comes to fillies that, you know, they'll have that brilliant 2-year-old season. Either the 3-year-old year goes wrong or the 4-year-old goes wrong, and they, you know, has she been horsey?
Now, I will say this. She is extremely, extremely moody. If she doesn't get everything her own way, she kind of just says, well, I don't want to play. And it's very, you know, it's very frustrating because we've seen her talent. We know it's there. So all I can do is continue to keep trying, and that's what you'll see me. That's what I'm doing. Summer Luck's good.
She's okay.
Oh, yeah, she comes back. Summer Luck is just can't play with the big, big girls on the grass. I think you're going to see Summer Luck. She runs well over the synthetic. We're going to try to win a stake or two. This will be her last year of running. But Summer Luck is what she is. She's a nice horse. She's not, you know, a superstar, but she's a nice horse.
I had Mike Trombetta last week, and you know, you do say if it's not going to be me, I want it to be you. In this case, it was. It was Charlotte with Global Access. A very nice win in the Marine. And you know, Skywire, you told us about Skywire, you know, that was going to be circling toward the Queen's Plate attempt, and Hafiz Union in there too, and you got to address him separately. But you know, where are your hopes right now for Queen's Plate?
I still think Skywire can win the Queen's Plate. I wasn't disappointed in his performance. I think he got beat by a nice horse, and I think he'll enjoy the mile and a quarter.
Who else continues to work toward a, because you'll have more than one, certainly.
Yeah, we have Federal Law. He runs this
weekend. Who ran okay, right?
He won the Queenston, and he runs this weekend, the plate trial. And then we'll see. This is a big weekend. We have the Oaks coming up. We have Hasta La Vista Baby, Speedy Soul, and Preferred Guest. We have three fillies running in the Oaks. And we've been known to, if one of them run well, you could see one of those in the Queen's Plate.
The best prep for the Queen's Plate is the Woodbine Oaks.
Yeah. I'm not so, I mean, I think our fillies are okay this year. They're nice. I'm not sure they're, you know, last year we had Wonder Gadot. She actually got beat in the Oaks, but had a terrible trip, and then went on and won the Queen's Plate. We'll see. We'll see.
What, give us an update on Gadot.
She actually, you'll see, she's retired.
She is retired.
She is retired. She's at Blue Water. We got her up. We brought her up to Woodbine. We were going to make the announcement since you asked me. Just wasn't, you know what? She had done so much, and I thought if we were going to do anything, we'd give her a little time, more time, and it just didn't make sense. So she's, I think she may be sold in November. That's normally what Gary does, but I don't know, you know, that to be a fact. But Gary does normally tend to sell his big fillies.
So maybe
she's with the Levy's.
Well, there you go, folks. There you want to talk a little breaking news. You always seem to break news on this on these visits. Wonder Gadot with a wonderful career, and you know, she leaves with a great resume, and it wouldn't have taken much to add the Kentucky Oaks to that legacy. It happens.
Well, I'm proud of her. I mean, I think she ran long and hard, made close to $1.5 million or something like that, and she's going to be she's so beautiful. She's going to be a beautiful mommy.
Well, and
maybe someday I'll get to train one of her offspring.
That's where you get a certain age in this business, and that's what happens. What are you going to do about Hoffa's Union? Are you going to regroup?
Yeah, Hoffa's Union is definitely in a regroup. I think maybe too much too soon, so he just needs to regroup.
All right. Well,
the horse is frustrating to me. Of all the horses you haven't mentioned, he's going to run here in the Easy Goers Dreammaker. I still think Dreammaker we've never seen his best performance yet. So I'm hoping maybe it'll come on Saturday.
And then if you got him going, you would look at a Haskell.
Well, yeah, maybe we'll see something like that. And then we're going to do another little crazy thing. We're going to run Strike Silver in the Woody Stevens.
Yep.
You know, he was second in Sanford, and his dirt form's pretty good. We got him running on the grass, and he won the win in your In Breeders' Cup. Ran really well here the other day. I can't remember the name of the race on the grass. Kind of had a troubled trip, and we just figured now's a good time to try the dirt. He's training really well.
Excellent. And what about Westpaw up at Woodbine?
Westpaw is a little bit of a secret. She belongs to my wife. We bought her for $10,000, I believe, and then 10% of her earnings, how she got her name is...
Oh, you talked about this.
Yeah, my son goes to plays baseball at Westport High School.
Right.
And so we put her name up to the school, and we got like 100 names, and they're Westport, and their name, they're the Wolfpack. So that's how
the
she...
Paw.
Yeah, that's where the paw comes from. I could possibly bring her to run her in the Schuylerville. She's equally as good on the dirt, and she didn't surprise me at all. I thought she would give us a big performance, and she did. She ran like a 72 buyer, which for a two-year-old's pretty good.
Well, and she's by Frack Daddy, mm-hmm. Who had a pretty decent performance at Saratoga, if we're looking for a tie-in, and is out of a Thunder Gulch mare.
Yeah, she's could be all right. She's Ontario Sire Canadian bred. What a program there. I think we ran her in a maiden special weight, and since she was Ontario Sire Canadian bred, the purse was $99,000 or something.
And she was hip 3589.
Yeah.
At Keeneland.
That's
booked
late.
Five?
Yeah, she was pretty pretty far
wow.
Yeah, back in the that was kind of going old school. My wife kept saying, "When are we going home? When are we going home?" And I said to her, I said, "I'm not going till the end." I said, "I'm going old school." So not only did we buy Westpaw, but we bought the half sister to Philly, won the 2-year-old Philly, won the Breeders' Cup last year, Cross Traffic Philly.
Jaywalk.
Jaywalk. So I bought Jaywalk's half sister for $8,000.
Before obviously it was before Jaywalk had emerged.
And then we sold her in the April sale, the Gainesway. She brought $100,000 in April. So those were my two.
Look at you. You're going
old school.
I'll tell you what.
I think I bought three or four horses for less than $5,000 or less than $1 million over a long period of time.
It doesn't matter. I mean that says a lot, and it also, you know, one of the things we love to do is hear these kinds of stories, because it takes endurance physically and mentally and you know. To stay the 2 weeks at Keeneland and look at one horse after the other.
Yeah, it'll wear you out.
How many,
have to tell you a funny story real quick. So I'm at the sale, and here comes this horse, and I buy him for $2,500. I can't even remember who he's by right this second. But so a friend of mine, Catherine Day Phillips, comes up to me. She said, "I really like that horse, but my vet failed it." And I said, oh, that doesn't mean anything. She goes, really? I said, I'll tell you what, you want him? And she goes, yeah. So I crossed out my name.
On the ticket.
On the ticket, gave it to her, and it was Jambalaya. He won the Arlington Million.
Are you kidding?
No, yeah.
I don't remember her telling that story.
Yeah, that's a true story. Yeah, that's how she got Jambalaya. I signed the ticket, then scratched it out and gave it to her.
The longer we talk, the more revelations there are. Yeah. What else can we dig up? And Ron Gierkink from the Daily Racing Forum has you're going to hear from him, I think, as minute you get off the air, and he'll write the story about Gadot.
Okay.
So I hope that everybody's had a long enough time to understand how to pronounce her name. I've done all I could, Mark.
Okay.
But that's a wonderful story. Mm-hmm. Next time we get we get Catherine Day on and of course she herself is a great sidebar, being Jim Day's daughter.
Catherine and I, we've been friends forever. So.
Because you and I do this all the time, and you're always so generous, we could go all the way around till noon.
But I don't know if you know, but I'm freezing, and you've got.
I've always got the sports card. All right, get out in the sun there, and listen. I can't thank you enough. As always, it's always so much fun. We learn a lot, and everybody delighted for the success that you and the team have had this Triple Crown season, and just everybody involved has excelled at every level.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's been interesting.
Mark Cassie, you can follow on Twitter, Mark E. Cassie. And what's the Edward?
Edward.
Mark Edward, absolutely. Makes sense. And just a complete delight, and getting ready for Saturday and the Belmont Stakes. We're going to talk a little bit about Indiana and about Presque Isle and more. And we'll thank Mark for spending this kind of time with us and being, he's always so open and frank, no matter where the conversations go. We'll take a break here. We'll come back to beautiful Belmont Park. Got 45 minutes on this Tuesday. The draw at 5:30. Dick Powell, Bill Downs, Jeremy Plonk in the next 45.